This is Social Entrepreneur with Sarah Calhoun of Red Ant Pants.
So being here in this little town, it seemed that having a music festival might provide folks a way to celebrate. And 6,000 fans came to the first one, which tripled the county's population.
Welcome to Social Entrepreneur. My name is Tony Lloyd. I'm a former Fortune 500 executive, but today I spend my time with changemakers who are making an impact in the world. Each week, you'll hear exciting stories of ordinary people just like you who are making a difference. They share their successes, their failures, and what they're learning along the way. Thanks for being with me today. Let's get started. Hi, and welcome back to Social Entrepreneur. And today, we're talking to Sarah Calhoun of Red Ant Pants. Now, Red Ant Pants manufactures functional women's workwear that fits and flatters, and it's made right here in the United States. Now, in 2000, Sarah was leading trail crews in the backcountry of Montana, and she ran into a problem. The pants made for women weren't rugged. She was doing a lot of rugged physical work. But she says the pants made for men, well, curvy women don't fit very well into square men's pants. So she set out to solve her own problem. And that's where this company came from. And to get started, she bought a copy of Small Businesses for Dummies, and she sat down in a coffee shop and sure enough, met her mentor. So miracles happen while you're in motion. Here she is, Sarah Calhoun of Red Ant Pants.
Hi, my name is Sarah Calhoun, the founding owner of Red Ant Pants, the first ever company designed to make workwear for women. Everything's made right here in the USA.
Workwear for women. So what's the problem you're trying to solve here then?
Well, it turns out that curvy women don't fit very well into square men's pants. And so my background was in farming and then backcountry work, and I was tired of wearing men's pants that didn't fit.
And when did you first discover that was a problem for you?
So right around 2000, when I was working in the backcountry and leading trail crews and that sort of thing, and it becomes a functionality issue in addition to a fit issue. And I realized there were a lot of other women in the industry that needed some good work pants that fit.
Yeah. And when you say work, so give me an idea of the kind of work that you would envision for people wearing your clothes.
Mm-hmm. So our Red Ant Pants customers are everything from farmers and ranchers to landscapers and gardeners, then a lot of women in the traditional trades, carpentry and welders and electricians, that sort of thing.
So do you find this generally about clothing lines for women that, you know, it's hard to fit, or sizes are all over the place, or, you know, durability. And so, you know, how do you think about that field?
Mm-hmm. I do think there's certainly a lack of consistency, especially with sizing and fit. And there's really no standard, which is challenging for not only for the apparel companies, but for the consumers certainly as well. And women come in so many shapes and sizes, especially for our bottom halves for fitting pants. So it's really a big sizing and fit challenge, certainly.
Yeah. And so what's out of bounds for your company? You know, you've talked about pants for women. Is that the only thing you make? Or, you know, so what's, If that's what's inbounds, is it, you know, where do you draw the line between what's inbound and out of bounds?
Mm-hmm. So we started with our original work pant, and that's still our core project. And we've added over the years our work shorts as well, and a work belt with a solid brass buckle, and hooded sweatshirts, and t-shirts, and long sleeve shirts, and hats, and aprons. And we've recently added a wool vest. It's a wonderful fall and winter item, as well as working on a work shirt and a work apron, a heavier duty apron as well.
Yeah. Did I see that you expanded into pants for men?
Not actually, but what we're finding is a lot of men are now wearing our women's pants, which I did not see coming at all.
Yeah. See, that's the beauty of business, right?
Right.
Like as soon as we say, this is our next growth area, we turn around and our customers say, no, actually, that's not your growth area. We have this other thing in mind.
Yep, certainly. So, yep.
Yeah. I'd like to get into your story a little bit and think about where this came from. So as I understand your story, it wasn't like you weren't into textiles or clothing or any of these things. That really wasn't your background. So, you know, can you just kind of And let's just take some time and let this unfold here. But so tell me your story. How did you get here?
So I grew up on a farm in Connecticut and went to school for environmental studies of all things. And then right out of school, immediately started working, instructing for Outward Bound and leading trail crews. So I did a lot of work outside needing heavy duty work pants and with zero business experience whatsoever, and also zero experience in the apparel industry or textiles or manufacturing or any of that. So I was not looking to start a company, but it really came out of necessity. And I spoke to some other companies trying to see if they would start a line of workwear for women. No one really jumped at it. And one guy said, if you're serious about it, why don't you start your own company? So at the age of 25, I very naively thought to myself, start a business. How hard could that be?
Well, hold on. I got to ask you this. So you were pitching the idea or you were seeking supplies or whatever. You were reaching out to companies who today you might even consider some of these companies to be your competitors in wear for women. And one of the people you reached out to said, well, you know, if you think that's such a great idea, why don't you start the company? Is that right?
Mm-hmm. That is correct.
Yeah. So I wonder if that person still has a job.
Yep. Yep. That was more of an outdoor gear company. So it wasn't direct competition, but yeah, it's a great point. But it was also a smaller business that, you know, it was great to have that seed planted by someone saying, you know, you can do this if it's something you're really excited about. And there is certainly a necessity out there. So that worked really well. And at that time, I literally didn't even know what a business plan was. I bought a copy of Small Business for Dummies, and I had just moved to Montana, having never been there before. And the first weekend in town, I was reading this book at a coffee shop, and a man noticed what I was working on, and he came over and asked what I was doing. And it turns out for the past 20 years, he had done production and design for a little company called Patagonia. So a very, very fateful day there in Bozeman, Montana, and that was back in 2004. And he invited me to his shop a week later and gave me loads of contacts and advice and just said, Sarah, you're onto something big here. I think you need to move on this now. And he's been one of my top mentors, and he's on my board of advisors to this day.
Wow. So many things I love about that. So one of it is, and before we started recording here, you and I talked about this phrase about miracles find you while you're in motion, right? And that you were in motion. You had been seeking supplies from people. You've been saying, I'm looking for a source someplace where I can get these pants. Then in frustration, you picked up Small Business for Dummies, and then you run into this person. And then that also illustrates, I think, you know, one of the other phrases I've heard a lot lately is the world is filled with kind people. If you don't find one, be one,
mm-hmm.
right? And it just illustrates the world really is filled with kind people. And I would describe my own career as in three phases. Someone liked me, they referred me, and I took the next role.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much my entire career. And it sounds like you just, you know, you happened upon that person who, one, gave you the contacts, two, helped you to sort of think through how to do what you're trying to do, but then stayed with you and became a mentor and somebody who was working with you over time. That's pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm. It really is. Absolutely. And when those things fall in your lap, you know you're heading in the right direction. You know?
It's like a little sign from the universe going, yep, that's the right trail.
Absolutely. Yep. It felt good.
That's great. So how did you learn this stuff then? You know, you had so many things to learn then, right? You had to learn how to create a business plan, how to do a P&L, how to fund the things. You had to figure out how to create prototypes and textiles and designs and sewing. I cannot imagine all the things you had to learn. So what did you tackle first?
It was a lot. And I had to do it all at the same time because there were a lot of catch-22s. As you know, when you're putting a business plan together, it's a tricky flow of research and homework and that sort of thing. Like, how are you supposed to know how many pairs of pants you're going to sell the first 9 months before you even know how much you're going to charge because you don't know where you're getting your fabric or where you're finding your manufacturers or what your product design is going to look like. So there's so many things. So it was a busy 2 years for sure. One of the first things that Richard, this Patagonia advisor, suggested was getting a job on the production floor somewhere. So I got a job sewing backpacks in Bozeman, which was really good to understand the more technical side and understand patterns and the way sewn goods come together. So that was helpful. And then really just did as much research and asking people and talking to other companies and just digging in and getting the work done to learn the rest of it. And slowly but surely it came together and built a broader board of advisors with some other great contacts in the area and used them and asked for help as much as possible.
Yeah. Did you fund all of this out of your own pocket? Did you seek outside capital? How'd you do that?
Mm-hmm. Yep. I initially was working through the SBA for my business plan and then went to a bank in Bozeman and a stodgy old male banker came out and was like, well, what do you need these for? We already got Carhartts. And I was like, you're missing the point here. And the interest rates were super high at that time. And I ended up borrowing privately, which worked really well.
Oh, good. Mm-hmm. Good. So you found some funders that loaned you capital. So did you give them equity in the company or was it just,
nope,
it
interest,
was just a loan?
Yep, just a straight up loan.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yep, which was, so you I was still, very lucky to be able to do that.
Yeah. And you still own 100% of the company mm-hmm, then?
Correct.
Yeah. So how'd you find your first customer that would buy and distribute them? Or did you just buy and did you just distribute them directly or how did you do that?
Mm-hmm. So I chose a direct business model where we only sell one pair at a time to our customers through our storefront here in White Sulphur Springs, as well as online, redancepants.com. And which is great in the sense that we get to keep the whole margin, but also a challenge in the sense that we have to educate the world about our new brand. And what we did for that was something called Tour de Pants, where we got an old Airstream trailer and took it on the road doing house parties all over the US and Canada. And we had beer sponsor and we got to know our customers face to face in those days. And that was a really good chapter to build the brand up.
This has got to be a great story. I love this. So you get an Airstream and you said we, so who is we?
So that's funny. I always, at the beginning, I used to say that and it would usually be my dog and my cat and I in our staff meetings every
right.
week.
Yeah.
This, I hired a tour rep to go on the road with me initially in those early years.
Wow. So you made the investment to get like a professional tour person to go with you. Is that right?
I would say more of a friend from the trail crew world that I trained to become professional. Yes. But it works, you know, and when you're genuine in the field and a lot of our, you know, we had a pretty good network of seasonal workers across the US, just friends and then friends of friends and people that were hosting the parties and bringing in all of their people. So that worked well because it was pretty authentic.
Yeah. So how did you pick where you were stopping with this Airstream trailer?
Yeah, we just did different regional routes, whether it was the Northeast or the California coast or a tour down to Texas or the Northern Rockies or whatnot. Just made, you know, compile all the folks that were interested and mapped a route around them. So kind of like a band going on tour.
Yeah. And when you said we compiled the folks that were interested, how did you know who was interested?
They just started reaching out once we used our initial round of contacts, the first couple tours, and then that just kept expanding and people would tell their friends and family about it and folks kept reaching out to us. So it worked really
yeah.
well.
Mm-hmm. So yes, let me just kind of picture this. And I'm sorry if I'm drilling Ooh. Down too much on
yeah.
this, but I'm fascinated by this story. So you probably had, you know, part of your Outward Bound work and you did trail work and you did all these things. And so you had a collection of email addresses in your Outlook or mm-hmm. your Gmail or whatever. And so initially you just reached out to them mm-hmm. and family and friends. Is that,
yep, absolutely.
Is that kind of the idea?
Yep, certainly.
And they said, sure, we'll help you organize here in fill in the blank.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm trying to pull out of my head, you know, Kennewick, Washington, mm-hmm. whatever, you know, come on down. We're going to host you here. And so you pull up in the Airstream. What happens? I mean, is there music? Is there beer?
Yep.
I mean, what happens?
We
there?
Pack in all the pants, which are quite heavy, it turns out, and all the beer. Big Sky Brewing out of Missoula, home of Moose Drool. They just gave us hundreds of cases of beer, so each party would get a case or two, and which is a pretty easy model, right? We put together a slideshow of customer pictures and just kind of the value based telling our story through slideshow and music, and we would play that and everyone would listen and cheer and sing along and get to know our product and our company values, and then the host would, it usually was a potluck or some sort of food, and some were parties in barns or yards or farms or just in living rooms, and then we'd get to know the customers and everyone would try on their pants and buy them and we'd pack up and head on to the next town.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, it's fun.
I love that story. So were you making money on this trip, or was the trip itself, was it just sort of sunk cost in the fact that, you know, the travel trailer, your time, mm-hmm. the beer, whatever, you know, and like you said, the beer was donated, mm-hmm. which is pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. So did you make profit mm-hmm. on that trip?
We sure did. But what we saw that I think was even more valuable is that it was a really personal experience with these new customers, and they got to know us on a personal level, and that we them as well. And then from there, though, the word was just spread like wildfire in each of these communities. They would all reach out to their networks. So then we'd be able to track our online sales. Like, oh, we were just in Madison, Wisconsin at a pants party, and now, boom, you know, we're getting a whole bunch of sales coming from that area. So it was cool that, you know, word of mouth is, you know, when your friend tells you something, you're going to listen versus the Facebook ad or something. So it was a very grassroots, fundamental level to get the word out.
And this tour de pants, what year was that?
That was from 2008 to 2013, on and off.
Okay. And what role do you think social media played in that? I mean, you showed up, were people taking pictures? Was this kind of a, you know, was there a social media buzz behind that too?
There certainly was, but honestly, we didn't have enough capacity, and I didn't have enough expertise at that time or time to really manage it well. These past couple of years, we've had, you know, official communications directors and whatnot that are really nailing it. But back then, it was a component often on their end of the hosts and those folks taking pictures and spreading it, but we underutilized social media back in those days, certainly.
But your friends, the people that you showed up and you did the little party for, mm-hmm. I said little party, that sounded dismissive,
no.
I think, but
no.
It didn't mean party. but you did this event for, mm-hmm. They were taking pictures and sharing on social media, yep. and their friends saw.
Certainly.
And there's, you know, one of the things I've been hearing more about lately is this idea of how we spend our money and the brands that we buy, they represent something about who we are as a human being and our values. Do you find that this is kind of it's a lifestyle purchase? It's a, I want to support this cause. I want to be known as a certain kind of person. I want to be known as supporting this certain kind of values. Do you think that's an important part of your brand?
Oh, 100%. Yep. So the components of it that were 100% made in the USA, and that's not going to change. That resonates with a lot of people. But also, I think the culture behind the brand of what we're doing with integrity and quality and a sense of humor and, again, a level of authenticity that customers really relate to, and they want to be part of that. And like I got a letter from a customer who told us that she wore her Red Ants pants into surgery because they made her feel stronger.
Oh.
I mean, that sort of thing, that blows my mind that it's becoming so much more than just a product.
I have chills. That is amazing. So thank you for sharing mm-hmm. that with me. So you ended up doing two more things. So, you know, as if being the founder of a company and creating an entirely new line of clothes wasn't enough, you happen to do two more things. And I'd kind of like to know in which order these came. And so you have a music festival that you host
mm-hmm.
and you established a foundation because, I mean, hey, let's, you know, in your spare time, you needed something to keep you busy, right?
Yes. So, yep. The curse of the entrepreneur.
Yes, exactly. So what was that about? What happened?
Yeah. So I think one of the big things I learned from being on Tour de Pants was just how many good people there are out there and wanting to connect them all and bring them together. And music is such an invaluable tool in connecting people. So, and I should mention that I live in White Sulphur Springs, Montana, which is about an hour and a half north of Bozeman. It's a town of 900 people, a little cow town in central Montana. Absolutely fantastic part of the world. And when I moved here, it was the lowest income of any county in the entire nation, which I did not realize upon choosing this place to live. But and I moved here because there's a wonderful book called This House of Sky, written by Ivan Doig, and it's his memoir of growing up here in this little ranching town. And it was just the kind of place I wanted to live. And we have high broadband internet that's faster than Bozeman and Billings, Montana. It's just amazing. We have everything a small business needs. And I think there's so much potential for rural America to really start more and more businesses. And when you have a workforce and affordable real estate and a good quality of life and all that good stuff. So being here in this little town, it seemed that having a music festival might provide folks a way to celebrate and stop working so hard for a minute. And again, to connect folks from all different backgrounds. So in 2011, we started the Red Ants Pants Music Festival, and 6,000 fans came to the first one, which tripled the county's population. Absolutely created a much bigger event than we ever expected. We've had headliners like Merle Haggard, Emmylou Harris, Taj Mahal, Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, Lucinda Williams was here this year. lots of great music, and it's 4 days of festivities in a cow pasture. Like literally all the school groups come and fill in gopher holes and pick rocks beforehand, and the whole community came together in a huge way to help pull it off. It really takes a lot of people pitching in, and then people keep coming. And this past year we had close to 17,000 people come.
And when you say in this past year, that was 2016?
2017, and we just finished in July, and this was our seventh annual festival.
Mm, okay.
So it's working really well. And one of the neat parts to me is one of my favorite pictures from the festival is two guys with their backs to the camera. They don't appear to know each other well. They're just enjoying a beer and listening to the show. And one guy at the back of his shirt reads "Save the Planet," and the other guy, who must work for an asphalt company, his shirt reads "Pave the Planet." But to me, that's what it's all about. That's progress right there. Especially these days, we need more things that are bringing us all together, I think.
That's the absolute truth. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we could spend an hour on that topic right there, mm-hmm, by itself. But you ended up forming a foundation. So where did the foundation come in on this? And then what does a foundation do?
Mm-hmm. So the festival is in part a fundraiser for the Red Ants Pants Foundation. And that's our 501c3, our nonprofit arm of the enterprise. And our foundation is in support of women's leadership, working family farms and ranches, and rural communities. So all the things we get really excited about. Then it all comes full circle with the pants and the folks that are doing these occupations where they need good work pants. And so we have some programs throughout the year, including a grant cycle. We've given away over $85,000 to different Montana organizations that have projects parallel to our mission. And we teach a timber skills workshop, so 4 days of chainsaw and carpentry training for women in September. We have a few spots left, September 21st through 24th here in White Sulphur Springs. And we're additionally working on a new women's leadership program where we're going to start by working on junior year high school girls across Montana to have a really in-depth leadership training that's a year-long program.
We need to head towards wrap-up. It's amazing to me how fast time goes here. So advice to early-stage social entrepreneurs. What's something you've learned on your journey that you could pass along?
I'd say do your research, certainly. Understand what you're doing, why you're doing it. I think things that come out of necessity are really, or when there's a problem that has to be solved, those are the ones that end up working versus someone just trying to start a business to make money, that sort of thing. Ask for help as much as possible. And what I found is that people are really honored to be asked for help because their expertise is valued. So that's a big one. But also be really intentional and honest with yourself about where you want to go with this company, and not only planning for failure, but plan for success. Because if it does become a really big project and a big success, then it's going to impact your life and your relationships and your livelihood and everything across the board. So really think of all those factors in a big way.
Where can people find Red Ants Pants online?
Yeah, redantspants.com is where all the magic happens, where you can buy all of our Made in the U.S. products. And then also redantspantsfoundation.org for our nonprofit info. And then, of course, the redantspantsmusicfestival.com.
Wow. So a call to action. So people have been hanging out with you and me for the last 20, 25 minutes or so. What's something you'd like to see them go and do as a result of this conversation?
Certainly, obviously, spreading the word about small businesses that do have an impact, certainly including Red Ants Pants, but not limited to that. And I think really paying attention to your local community as far as who's doing the work on the ground and how you could potentially help them or expand their businesses, or think of ways of local investing is a really neat idea. And starting your own things. I really think that instead of having a few really big businesses, if we focus on smaller, stronger businesses, that's gonna help us all across our communities, across the nation.
Well, Sarah, thanks so much for joining us on Social Entrepreneur.
Thank you.
And thanks to you, the listener, for joining us today. You are the reason that we produce Social Entrepreneur every Monday. You can find the show notes, bonus material, and more at tonyloy.com. That's TonyLoyd.com. And while you're at it, will you do me a favor? Subscribe, rate, and review this podcast on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app. It really helps others to find these stories of changemakers who are making a difference in the world. Well, listen, thanks so much for joining me today. And until next time, please remember to use this one short, amazing life and go make an impact. Thanks. We'll talk to you next time on Social Entrepreneur.